Welcome to the Desert Sanctuary with Carl and Laura Forehand.
Often when we have doubts about religion or simply want to ask questions, it can feel like we are wandering out into the desert.
We would like to invite you to join our sanctuary, the Desert Sanctuary.
We've tried to pick guests that would resonate with and challenge us and our fellow seekers here in the desert.
We believe that a key to the journey is to keep asking good questions, and we believe that all stories are sacred.
Our hope is that you will find life and healing for your body and mind, and that you will be able to be where you are and be who you are.
And now, here is our show.
Hi, welcome to the Desert Sanctuary Podcast. I'm Laura Forehand. I am here with Carl Forehand, and Winston is on the floor, not moving a single inch.
Winston the Wander Dog is with me every day here.
Yeah.
As I do my thing.
He's your companion.
He is.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's a blessing. Sometimes it's a curse.
Yeah, it just depends. Like a minute ago when you tried to, move and tried to get around him and he wouldn't even move. But
pretty easy to deal with most of the time, except when he starts acting like a dog. And then I get irritated at him, right?
Yeah.
For being a dog.
For just being himself.
For being himself. It's a shame.
Yep. What are we here to talk about today?
This is starting a series that we're doing coming out in April. So it's ahead of time. We're in February recording it, but it was from our book from last fall called Leaning Forward. And we just want to go through a few of those chapters that I think would be real important to people. And you can feel differently about this. This is not to tell you how to think or what to believe, but I think it does start a lot of discussion. And the first chapter that we were talking about is worship. So we talked about, you know, in the beginning of the book, we talked about how we were learning things in the desert and so on, but then there's some of it that has to do with things like this, like worship, that many people are evolving. They're kind of thinking differently about some of these things. So can we start it off by just you saying how you felt about worship? I always get to talk first, usually.
Well,
so,
first, can we like kind of define, like, what do we mean by worship? Are we talking like the singing aspect of worship? What do we? Do you think?
It's funny because over the years, like 20 years being a pastor, and we went through a lot of different things and a lot of different sized churches, you know, different churches and different places. And overwhelmingly, when people talked about their worship experience, when they talked about their experience with God that was most relevant to them, usually it was in nature or it was like in their car. You know, some people like in the shower or in a bath, but mostly, very few of them talked about, you know, their deepest experience being in a church or in a building, even though, you know, we're really hardwired, not hardwired, but programmed to believe that we need to come to a building. But,
I mean, I guess when we were in organized religion, worship to me meant the worship service, that the musical part where, you know, now looking back, I know was kind of designed to evoke this emotional response for me, which it did very, very well. I always think about the music and just...
So is that okay? I mean, is that okay to have an emotional response or to be affected by that?
I think to a point. I think part of my experience, which I was going to say, was, you know, more feeling like I'm a wretch, you know, I'm a sinner. I'm worthless without this deity. So looking like I still have kind of a bad taste in my mouth when it comes to worship. Now, in the years of the ministry that we were in, the churches that we were in, I can't say that I had that bad taste in my mouth then. It just always left me feeling like I was worthless. Like I didn't measure up. So, you know, which now that leaves a bad taste in my mouth to think that, all those years singing all those songs, I was almost self-programming to believe that I was worthless.
Yeah. And we, you know, we were in small churches most of the time, or all the time. We were pastoring churches. Our first church was one that someone started, and then we kind of stepped in when they were still in a double-wide trailer, and all of a sudden we're having 40 or 50 people, and then it starts, you know, blossoming a little bit, and we built our own metal building out in the field somewhere. Right. And, I mean, a lot of that went well, and even in that type of environment, you know, we had this guy that was like one of the best piano players, you know, in that part of the country. Mm-hmm. And it just, you know, amazingly good for the size. And his family would help sing and so on and that. And all his, both of his daughters got involved, and it was pretty good. And our second church, we had a reasonably good music program, even though it, you know, there was differences about what we should do and what we shouldn't do, as always. But then even in our third church, you know, it's several of the Christian motorcycle group wandered into our church, and kind of we ended up having a pretty good, you know, service. And we were small enough that we could design it, right? However we wanted and however we thought we should at the time. But it was important to fundamentalist evangelicals to have a worship service. Mm-hmm. It's one of the big five purposes of the church: evangelism, worship, discipleship, service, prayer. Every evangelical church has a quote-unquote worship service. And I think it got past, you know, some of our watchful dragons. You know, we don't want to get excited, we don't want to smile. You know, we're fighting that urge kind of to stay composed all the time, and sometimes it kind of gets past that. I remember our youngest daughter, Lily, at the second church, used to dance, you know, in the front row. I don't know if somebody kind of discouraged her after a while, but, you know, it kind of had that effect. It's like a mini concert. And that's what I was saying, is it wrong? Because we go to a concert, you know, and see Bob Dylan, or you'd probably be someone else like James Taylor or something. But we get moved by that music. It has like a hypnotic effect on us. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think, proven by not just society, but proven by science.
Yeah, but there's something different about the worship service in the church, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Because, like I said, you are singing these songs that can be very self-deprecating. And actually, you kind of like run the gamut of emotions. So you come in, at least this is how it was at the churches we pastored, but also the churches we visited in between pastoring churches. They kind of usher you in with really upbeat, you know, get y'all hyped up. And then you start singing songs, you know, about basically your life is trash unless you have this relationship with the Lord. And then at the end, you know, you're singing these songs of invitation again that make you feel so to me, it's like inside the walls of organized religion, it's a lot of emotional I don't know a better word than just
It's mind control.
Itself. Right. Just to think about the songs that we sang, just very self-deprecating, you are worthless without the Lord. Where I feel like, okay, I go to a concert. I go to a James Taylor concert. I pretty much know what kind of music I'm going to listen to. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to sit there and sing songs along with him that are self-deprecating.
Yeah.
So... yeah, I guess I'm getting a little like riled up about it because I do think there's a distinct difference. Yes, I do think that worship services in the church are very concert-like, 100%. Mm-hmm. It's a show.
Yeah.
But the songs that we are encouraged to sing you know, to me can just, you know, be very wounding.
Yeah, they've and kind of admitted that eventually. Even the hymns, you know, have a real rhythmic beat to them, and they're designed to make you feel something. And later on, when Hillsong came along and made that into a science, then everybody copied them. Then we almost like churches got honest, like, yeah, we're hypnotizing people, you know. And it's everything that happens inside a church, in my opinion, is kind of like that hypnotic trance.
It's very purposeful.
Yeah, and then it's suggestive, and especially when the pastor gets up afterwards and reinforces those post-hypnotic suggestions, mm-hmm. It can be very powerful and controlling, and it mm-hmm. can cause people to believe that...
Believe things about themselves that are not true.
That's right. And also to, you know, to feel that deeply because it was in that service, their dopamine goes up and all those things, and all the chemicals get released. And so then they don't feel any of that on Monday. Mm-hmm. And so they have to come back. We've talked about that and out into the desert about, you know, that how that works. But modern worship especially bothers me. It's real theatrical. Mm-hmm. Once you get any size at all, you need to have a production. It's well rehearsed.
I can attest to that. Being on the worship team, we would spend hours rehearsing.
Right. And that when we could, we'd have a separate night to rehearse and make sure it was exactly right.
Yeah. And then this is just a side note, and then it was never... It was never exactly right.
Yeah.
On Sunday morning, there's always some sort of glitch, whatever. Anyway, go ahead. But sorry, I'm probably going to be a little snarky during this podcast.
That's okay. But it's well rehearsed, like the sermon, which delivers hopes of engagement by the congregation. So if we do it right, they'll engage. Mm-hmm. It'll be moving, they'll be excited.
And how can, are you talking about the sermon can be, like, can engage the congregation?
I think the music can too.
I know, but I agree with the music. Mm-hmm. But how does a sermon, I'm going to get off track here, I guess, but how does a sermon engage people when they have to sit there, they can't raise their hand, they cannot question?
Well, it's a very coercive engagement.
How is it? Like, I'm thinking as a teacher.
Yeah.
Like, if my students sit there for 30 minutes to an hour and they don't move from their seat.
Yeah.
They are not engaged, and I would, like, get in some serious, like, not trouble, but I would be, like, that evaluation would not go well. Yeah. Like, my students are bored out of their mind. So, how is a sermon?
Say that. I'm going to explain. Okay. So, I'll explain the best I can.
Okay.
So, remember that there was a couple times when I tried to change up the service?
Yes.
And I said, let me just... have the sermon first.
You were following the Holy Spirit, but the rest of the congregation did not get the memo.
So, you know, like times I moved all the chairs out.
I know.
Said, let's just
stand
for a little while.
Yep.
We'll put them back eventually, and then I let them put them wherever they want. But there was a couple times when I said, let's just flip the service over, and I'll do the sermon first, and then we'll sing, and we can sing as long as we want. It'll be fun. But it never worked.
No, I know.
Because it was backwards.
Yeah.
And not just in backwards of what we were used to. To be engaged in the sermon, you need to be conditioned or hypnotized, basically. And our friend is studying mm-hmm. You know, he's working with hypnotics. Mm-hmm. And we've done a few sessions with that. Mm-hmm. But you have to be hypnotized. You have to be put into the right mood first. You have to be feeling bad about yourself to some extent. You
That's
have to be, quote-unquote, convicted.
Right.
To where I got to have this answer from this person. You know, if you put your students in a position of being very hungry, you know, you didn't let them have food for a long time, and you said, just sit still for a minute, and I'm going to give you some food. Then, and that we call it food, you know.
Yeah, I know.
I'm not trying to be too dramatic here, but that it is like that.
Yeah.
That all of that, you know, all of the stuff from the time you come in the doors and shake hands come into a climate-controlled environment, hear nice music, then you get fired up, mm-hmm. and you slow down and get convicted, right, mm-hmm. by the, not necessarily by God, but by the musicians, right. by the singers. Greg Locke's church has an hour and a half worship time. They sing and do all that before he even gets up.
An hour and a half.
Just look online at one of his church services.
I don't know that I could.
And then he preaches probably for about an hour. Yeah. Mm. But it needs that conditioning before he can get up and say some of the things he says. Mm. But it's well rehearsed. I wrote in there, the energy, focus, and function of most churches revolve around the worship service.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, if you think about that, the way, like I said, even when you come in, I'm thinking one church that we went to for quite some time, how as soon as like that on the big screen, the timer that was, you know, 5 minute timer. And once it hit zero, I mean, drums and guitars and just really loud, mm-hmm. you know, I mean, it's so systematic in my opinion. It is purposeful. That energy, that function, that focus that you're talking about, it's deliberate. It's intentional.
Yeah. I remember after we stepped down from our third church and we started going to that other church, mm-hmm. an hour away from here. And at first, because, oh, yeah, this is, you know, kind of like I missed this in a way. Mm-hmm. But then pretty soon we said, wait a minute, you know, and we kind of stepped back and started evaluating it. And then when we stopped going to church altogether, we really didn't, after a while, we really didn't miss that. But we kind of saw somewhat that we were addicted to that. Mm-hmm. We were addicted to worship and going to church. And we started doing things like meditating. Mm-hmm. My writing fills some of that mm-hmm. void for me. And then having discussions, podcasts. And it's a shame that we're almost 60 and sometimes we don't communicate as well as we want to. We can come back here and have a podcast and communicate mm-hmm. pretty well. But some of those things I think are just as good. I don't have a lot of practices. You don't have a lot of practices mm-hmm. that we have to do every week at a certain time or anything like that. But still, we are able just, you know, like I said before, by being in nature and being outside or you being with the grandkids, mm-hmm. you know, you kind of have that special bond with them. For me, it's writing. You know, and some of those things really, for me, are better than going to a place and them, you know, doing their thing to me.
Yeah,
you know?
And I think we talk a lot about on this podcast authenticity, and I think that anytime you have to script something, is it really authentic? So people ask me, you know, what are your practices now? And it's like, I do have some routines. I'm not going to lie. I'm kind of like routine based, but I don't feel like I have a script that I have to follow necessarily. You know, I thought about that, cause we're going to do a podcast tomorrow with somebody that I don't know how well you know this person, but I don't know him at all. And so I thought, you know, about what if he says, you know, well, what do you call yourself now if you don't call yourself a Christian? And it's kind of goes along the same lines, because I'm like, I don't really have a label for myself
and
either.
Carl and Laura.
Yeah. It's like, I just want to try to find my most authentic self. And I think if I'm going to be kind of scripting everything and saying, I have to do this practice at this time every day, then I think it loses its authenticity for me.
Yeah.
That's just for me.
And one time we went to a prayer school, mm-hmm. you know, and they talked about well-crafted prayers, like using prayers, mm-hmm. prayers from the past. Mm-hmm. And I said in something I wrote that's sort of like kissing your sister, you know, it doesn't, it's not authentic.
Oh, gross.
At all, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not, take someone else's words of the past, because.
Right.
Not only am I relying on what they thought and believed at that time mm-hmm. in their life and in history, mm-hmm. But also someone else's words. So I, you know, I normally don't go down that road. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You know, we talk a lot about worship, but I don't know much about the history of worship. Like, maybe you can enlighten me. I don't know much about it. I don't know that I care a ton about it, yeah. but maybe just enlighten me a little bit.
So what this is me. I'm not a lifelong scholar of worship or anything, because in essence, for me, I think there's not that much to it. I think it's just that we at points in time, take back in a tribal time, we're sitting around the campfire and we're wondering, you know, how the world got there. We mm-hmm. start to kind of invented a need for a deity, and then we, and it's, if there's a deity, if there's something that created us, it must be bigger than us,
mm-hmm.
and it must be more powerful than us. We must have to appease it, because that's what all the other bigger things
yeah.
in life, that's what happens with them. We have to appease them some way, or outsmart them, or please them. And so in all of those models, going all the way back, you know, if you take the biblical history all the way back to, you know, Moses and Abraham and the desert and all that, God is an anthropomorphized version of us, more powerful, most often with a score to settle. So, mm-hmm. you know, because he's bigger and more powerful, and we're dumb and we don't know anything, and we, you know, are so much inferior to him, we make him mad all the time, like a,
yeah.
you know, like a bad father, and he takes his wrath out on us. And so we need to, that anger and wrath needs to be satisfied somehow. But when we go back, when people that study culture and study religion and things like that, when they go back and study it in depth, my understanding of what they find is that religion developed more because of culture than any kind of mandate
uh-huh.
from an invisible being.
Uh-huh.
In other words, tribal people around the time of Abraham worshiped more based on their suppositions about God and their cultural norms.
Mm-hmm.
Like sacrifice.
Mm.
People were sacrificing before Abraham and Moses
right.
you know, brought this idea from God that we also should sacrifice
yeah.
to our one God instead of your many gods. And they said, God's saying we're going to do it this way.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I don't condemn people for doing that, because it made sense to them. They were using the knowledge and understanding they had to hope for the best possible outcomes in their life.
Mm-hmm.
And they imagined God to be more powerful than them, and they hoped he would bless them in some way. So they projected human qualities onto their deity, invented ways to invoke his favor. Right?
Yeah.
So I'm sure worship is where we get the idea of submission.
Mm.
Right? So we need to
yeah.
submit. And then that starts to make sense to us. Modern worship is not just meditating on the divine and aligning with holy intentions. It's really a performance
mm-hmm.
where we spend billions of dollars to put on various productions to invoke the spirit in one way or another.
Can I stop you there?
Yeah.
Why would we need to invoke the spirit?
I know, right?
I mean, it's just so contradictory how we talk about, you know, God is this omnipotent, powerful, you know, ever-present being, always with you, always, you know, how many times we hear all those kind of messages and even preach some of those messages in the church, and then the flip side of that is, well, we have to we have to invoke the spirit. We have to, mm-hmm. we have to bring the spirit into this place. And it's just like, looking back, I'm like, I think there was some cognitive dissonance, but I didn't know how to word it. And I really wish I would have, mm-hmm. because now I'm just going, man, I can't believe that I yeah. ever tried to make sense of that. Or I somehow did make sense by just bypassing over it.
Yeah. Some of, I think of now, you know, some of my, when I was working a physical job for a while here, a while back, does it make any sense? Then I was getting up earlier, and so mm-hmm. I'd sit on the porch, and some of those times when I was just doing nothing, when I was clearing my mind, mm-hmm. and just, was when I had some of the deepest thoughts I've mm-hmm. had in my life. But we say, well, God has a plan and purpose and all those things we say like that. And people think, well, something's got to happen. Something needs to happen. And so obviously it's something I'm doing wrong. Or mm-hmm. I'm not doing enough. And so we have churches where we get real animated, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that makes us feel something different. And we can't confuse dopamine with the Spirit of God, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or the Spirit. Or the Great Spirit or whatever. You know, you can't... You know, but we think, you know, we're the one that made the mistake. You know, God's perfect and we made the mistake, right? So we need to somehow, you know, God's like a passive aggressive parent.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
You know, he's just got his arms folded and is not going to pay attention to us till we make it right mm-hmm. somehow. And that, you know, that's a dysfunction of society
mm-hmm.
that's been projected onto our religion.
Mm-hmm.
It can't be what God is like.
Mm-hmm.
You know, otherwise God is immature.
Mm-hmm.
God has a mental illness.
Mm-hmm.
He needs counseling.
I think that was one of the things that, oh man, has bothered me for a long time. Like even before we started deconstructing is... You know, I've shared the story of my earthly father. And I'm like, that was one thing. God and my earthly father are pretty much the same person,
mm-hmm.
you know? And so, mm-hmm. yeah, I always had trouble envisioning God as anything other, you know? And people can say, well, you know, you just have the wrong vision of who God is. But I'm like, the God that is preached in churches, however, sounds very much like this passive aggressive, mm-hmm. I'm going to withhold love from you because you're a sinner or you aren't living your life according to the way I think you should be living it or whatever. So I just had to throw that in there.
Yeah, it's a lot of modern people that are progressive or deconstructing or whatever say, well, we're shifting that narrative. We're saying God is love and God is, you know, restorative.
But what is their definition of love? Like,
yeah. And what do we still have to do? Do we still have to go to church? Well, yeah, you should go to church still. So do we still have to use the Bible? You know, yeah, you should still do that. And you should, you know, one person's still pretty much going to get up and preach every Sunday and we're still going to do it the same way.
Well, and if God never changes, then why do we have to shift the narrative?
Yeah. Right.
I mean,
well, if we misunderstood the right narrative, but that's
okay. So all these years, all these pastors, these theologians, these people that have been through seminary and back, yeah. got it wrong. Is
yeah,
that what you're telling
that's
me?
What I'm telling
okay.
You.
All right. We'll
I'm telling
that.
You that that.
See, I can't, Carl. My head's about to explode now.
For 1700 years, I say theologians are the problem. Because they've been standing up on a stage saying, come hear us, mm-hmm. come listen to our music, mm-hmm. come here, and we'll fix your theology.
We have the words of God.
Yeah, we know.
We know.
We're speaking for God.
Yep.
Even though, you know, Protestant churches have splintered off into 40,000 different denominations or whatever,
mm-hmm.
and Catholics are sometimes divided and so on and so forth and so on. But, I think theologians are the problem because they've said, no, they got it wrong. We'll get it right. We'll fix what my predecessor said was wrong. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm going to fix I'm going to fix it for them. And when it's new and like interesting and exciting, then that draws people, you know, then we can have a bigger worship band and all that, you know, and it just kind of plays on itself.
And I appreciate what you're saying about theologians, but the theologians wouldn't be where they are if people, the congregation, did not allow them to be in the position of power that they are. Now, I don't want to victim shame or anything else, because some people are like literally trapped in their religion and whatnot. And I get that. But there's something to be said for the people of the church too.
But it's those,
like, they're hanging on those words and they're like, yes, yes, you are the mouthpiece of God, instead of like having their own critical thinking.
Right.
They have abandoned that for someone who went to seminary or a Bible college, or, you know, or not, and just says they've heard from the Lord. Yeah.
And what seminary did was stop their critical thinking, because since then, those men, women in those positions of power standing up on the stage have been defending their positions.
Right.
You know, not necessarily critical thinking as much anymore. They're just defending their creed or their belief system or their doctrinal statement or their wild ideas. And so the congregation contributes to that is, number one, money.
Right.
But also volunteer labor.
Right.
That's a few places we go and give money and volunteer.
Yeah, we pay the church to allow us to work for them.
Yeah, we're going to the Attachment and Trauma Network this week, way before this taping will come out. But we're going to volunteer because we couldn't pay.
Right.
But they didn't ask us to come pay and volunteer. Right. Anyway, but all of that, you know, keeps the overhead down so that we can pay the pastor more and stuff like that. I want to ask this question and see what you think about this.
Okay.
No. You read it ahead of time. Does God need my worship?
No.
Why do you say that?
No. I just, well, you've used this example, and I'm trying not to look at your notes because I want to tell it from my own, like, perspective. But, you know, that's like me expecting my students to worship me because I'm their teacher.
Right.
Like, I would rather have some conversations with them. You know, if there's something that they perhaps have questions about, like, let's talk about it. I try to bring forth enthusiasm for, that's a great question. Let's go research that. I don't know the answer to that.
Right.
Maybe you can look that up and you can teach me something.
So
I certainly don't expect them to come in and, you know, now there's a difference between worship and respect. And, but respect to me is a mutual thing.
Right.
Like, they don't worship me. I would like them to respect me, but I have to respect them and not like scream at them, belittle them, you know, all the things that are toxic in a relationship in order for them to respect me.
But in churches, that's not what's expected of people as worship. I mean, when, because you see people crying out to God. You see people begging God.
Yes.
You see people
that is so heartbreaking.
Trying to just praise Him as much as they can. They even, a lot of people go to where they're just in every sentence they're inserting filler words in there to praise God because they think they have to do it all the time. And my example of that, yours is your students, mine is my children, right?
Right.
So, I want to say this right, but for a number of years, I was kind of God to them in a way. And what I mean by that is I could fix problems for them. I could, to a certain extent. I could heal their wounds also to a certain extent. And I could get them out of trouble also to a certain extent, right? So I was kind of like God to them. It didn't last very long. And they certainly didn't worship me.
Right.
And
Nor I don't think he wanted them to.
Yeah. Because if I needed them to praise me, and just think about an earthly father or mother, if you needed our three kids to worship you and praise you all the time, Mom, you're so great, you're so great. Mm-hmm. We're not worthy. If they did that to you, you would just kind of grab them by the scruff of the neck and say, knock it off. That is not what I need. I need your love. I treasure your companionship.
Well, we're in relationship together. Right. We're in relationship together. And so, like, there needs to be, like I was saying, that mutual respect and love for one another. And
if I was a really, really, really good dad, then I still wouldn't need it, even though I did tons of things for them. I would hope that they'd be grateful, I hope they'd appreciate what happened. Most times they don't. A lot of times they don't because they're kids and everything hasn't developed in their brain yet.
Right.
But if I'm demanding that, then it makes me a lesser father or lesser God or whatever, I think it would be appropriate to think it more like you said, a relationship. It's a union where energy flows between us, but I don't think we should think of it as transactional.
Right.
If they appreciate me enough, I'll do more. Obviously there's some gray lines in there, like if they're totally ungrateful, I might quit helping them for a little while, just so they fall on their face, or so that they'll learn from it. But other people say it's us that need to worship God. We need it somehow. Do you agree with that?
I mean, I might have agreed with that statement at one point, but I haven't worshiped God for 6 years now, and I don't feel the need to do that. I don't feel like something is lacking.
Nothing's missing.
No.
Yeah. I kind of feel the same way. I think that's flawed as well, because if I had to, my father might have been stronger and more capable at times in my life, but if I must praise and worship him to get his attention, then we don't have a connection or a relationship.
No, for lack of a better word, it's abuse, because it's emotional and psychological abuse. Mm-hmm. If you're withholding something until somebody praises you in the right way, says the right prayer, says all the right words. Mm-hmm. And here's the other part of that, but they never tell you exactly how to pray or what to say that will make everything perfect and better.
They seem to not say anything at all.
Right.
Except that we confuse our dopamine rush, with the spirit. Mm-hmm. And so we think, we went to church and we felt this thing, kind of like what I felt when I went to watch that concert, and so we say, that must be God responding, and we make up stuff and it gets all convoluted and you end up where you don't believe anything, any of it, So let's talk about New Testament and Jesus, what he said. If you're going to say, Old Testament, that was different, and now it's different, and now it's better, and whatever. But in what I saw was that Jesus was about dismantling various aspects of his own religion, which was Judaism. Mm-hmm. He was a Jew.
For those who don't know.
Those who don't know.
He was not a Christian.
He was not an American. And he was from the Middle East, so, right? So he spoke Aramaic. Mm-hmm. He was an Arab. He was a Jew.
Most likely had dark skin.
Darker skin.
Definitely wasn't my shade of Caucasian.
But he was dismantling the aspects of his worship that were unnecessary. Mm-hmm. He said, the Father doesn't desire sacrifices. Mm. He didn't mention a spirit and truth worshiper, but he said to that same person, it's not going to be in a place. You're not going up there to the mountain. You're not coming down to Jerusalem. That's not where you're going to worship. That's not what worship, you know, in a sense, that's not what worship is. It's in spirit and in truth. And he didn't explain that. And so the church has been confused ever since. He did say that the Father is seeking worshipers, but they would not worship in a place.
Seeking worshipers. See, that almost sounds like God was requiring people to worship him.
Yeah. So
sorry if I'm jumping.
If
I could,
I'm going to jump ahead a little bit, because I think just that one statement. So we've had all the issues with the Bible that could make it. Well, that I can't trust that those few words are exactly what he said. But even if he said it, even if he said something that means similar to what we mean, spirit and truth. Spirit means, not in the flesh, right? Not, so it's definitely not singing, it's not any of those things. It's not coming to a building. It's not listening to a preacher. Worship, I think a better word of the religious words we have left over, right, so far, I think a better word is communion. Because communion is more like being with than doing something to invoke a deity.
So you think that's what was meant by that?
Well,
scripture passage, worshipers means like I'm like to be in relationship with.
It's, communing, being with. And go back, go back to your students, your grandchildren, your children. What you most desire as, in our case, the let's say the older being, the more mature being or whatever, what you desire from that other being is what?
Just to be with
them. To be with them, to be, to commune with them. And it's, it has the communion in the traditional sense does have images of embodiment and other connotations. But the little focus I can imagine is simply being where I am. Like I say a lot of times, being present with another person. And you've talked about that so many times with Holland, our first grandchild, child. And how just being with her was something amazing. Yeah.
And I feel that with all of them. I don't want people to think that I don't feel that with the other two, because I do. And I feel that a lot with, Jackson, because I probably see him more than I do the girls. Holland's Holland's in school, and so we don't get a chance to see them as much. But definitely there's, and words don't have to be exchanged. There's nothing that any of them need to say to me in order for me to have that desire to be with them and to love them. Like, they don't have to recite something specific or say just the right words. And that's something that I want them to know, whereas I feel like all my life as a Christian, like I said earlier, there was that, well, how do I pray this? If I'm struggling with something in my life, what if I don't say the right words? Obviously if my quote unquote prayers aren't answered, then I probably either didn't pray enough or I didn't say the right words.
Yeah, it's all transactional.
And what a, terrible, what a, that's just such a heavy weight.
Yeah, it is. That's why there's a lot of issues and abuse. So I wanted to read this thing from that chapter in our book. And it was, when I was wrestling around with this phrase of God, I am of God. If I still believe in God, it's I am of God. So if I were to simply imagine my thoughts about God to be, I am of God, then to me it would simply be, simplify the idea of worship. In fact, it might make the idea of worship not even necessary in a practical sense. I would not need to appease, please, or placate the divine in any way. Because when I'm talking about being of God, I'm talking about God is in everything, and that kind of idea.
Right.
Because I proceeded from God and am externally connected to divine love, which is something a lot of people talk about nowadays, mm-hmm. an act of worship might even be extraneous. If my whole being and existence flows from God, why would I need to gain his approval or coax him or myself in any way to be closer? In other words, how can you be closer than connected? Mm-hmm. If I plug in the lamp and it connects to a source of electricity, I don't know how it can be any more connected than it already is. Mm. If God is in me and I am in God, things the Bible actually says, mm-hmm. then why would I need to coax something deeper to happen?
Mm, that's a good point.
It's more like I need to realize, like become more aware or conscious of what already is. Mm-hmm. So when I meditate and do centering prayer or whatever I do these days, this is what I feel happens. I do not usually say anything, and I'm not usually even expecting anything. I'm not trying to petition or praise. I am simply being present with what is and becoming more aware of the presence that connects to all things. Some people call it being present with presence. And so, you know, we can call it whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Maybe you want to call it communion, mm-hmm. you know, and I went through and talked about that.
Mm-hmm. So this just kind of, this happens from time to time, but it also just kind of came up today. I was talking to someone close to me and, you know, they called because there was an issue with their child. And coming out of Christianity, it's like, what do you do in those moments? And this may be a totally different podcast, but when you were reading that, it kind of reminded me that, so what do we do when we don't need to petition and plead, mm-hmm. you know, but we have maybe some devastating things that are going on in our lives.
Yeah.
You know, and that's happened to me before, and it's like I don't even know what to do
yeah.
because I don't believe in the power of prayer. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to beg God, you know, because if nothing happens, then I think he's just, you know, a dick
right.
basically.
He's just ignoring us.
So oh. like, what do we do when we're out in the desert and we don't believe in the power of prayer and we don't believe that we're not going to beg anymore this deity, this sky daddy, this big man in the sky, whatever you want to call him. What do we do with those hard things in life?
Yeah.
And this may be you might say we need to table that for another podcast so you can yeah. think about it. I don't know,
well,
but
we do have one that's on prayer. So I think so that's later on. But I think, you know, when we were talking about abuse the other day and we were talking to Pete Singer mm-hmm. and he talked about, you know, the areas of say abuse of children and things like mm-hmm. that. He said, you know, something like, you know, we say, what do we do? How to fix this problem? He said, stop abusing people. Mm-hmm. Stop abusing people. And so when one of my friends is hurting, what should you do? You should be with them, just like we're talking about. Mm-hmm. Be with them. Stop imagining, you know, that some being somewhere is mm-hmm. going to magically fix this. Because mm-hmm. we know, if we're not faking ourselves out, we know that this, you know, those amazing, miraculous things barely ever happen. Mm-hmm. They hardly ever happen. And we might even attribute those to something else. But just be with them. Have not only compassion, but empathy mm-hmm. and concern for them. And like we're talking about with the women in the conference, they said, learn how to listen. Mm-hmm. Listen to them, hear them, empathize with them, have compassion for them. And if there's something you can physically do, then do it mm-hmm. for them, right? Mm-hmm. Or call someone you know that could help them. Mm-hmm. And get involved, give up some of your time mm-hmm. to help them in some cases.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. That makes sense.
I think, you know, to me, what I noticed in churches over the 20 years is generally prayer requests were either used for gossip.
100%.
Or they were used to just bypass. Mm-hmm. You know, okay, so thoughts and prayers, we'll be praying for you. And that was...
That's as far as it went, that usually.
Because now I don't have to do anything mm-hmm. or get out of my comfort zone or get up in front of my TV. Mm-hmm. I can just, you know, pass it on. And while I'm at it, I might gossip about why this happened to mm-hmm. that person mm-hmm. instead of actually helping them.
Well, and, you know, sometimes I think about what I might substitute for that these days is like, send me positive vibes and things like mm-hmm. that. And
yeah.
So I think I need to think about why I'm saying that. You know, I think is there something in our human nature that needs to know? I think it is that connection piece that needs to know that somebody is there thinking of me, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. And we could do but maybe just instead as of saying, easy with our new language.
Right. Yeah exactly.
But I think,
you know, it's giving me some things to think about.
When I had my stroke, I think it was really important that our friend Derek would call me at least once a week. Mm-hmm. And he's of course slacked off a little bit from that, but that was very meaningful for me, just mm-hmm. that someone connected with me.
Right.
And heard me. You know, yep. And if I needed to vent or something, then they could do that. And that's what you and I do for each other a lot nowadays. So,
mm-hmm. But I think it's okay to tell people that in this particular situation, you know, this person was going to have kind of a tough conversation with their child. Mm-hmm. And so is it okay to say, you know, because there's too many miles between us. I can't physically be there.
Yeah.
But I guess I can check in, right? Mm-hmm. But is it okay in the meantime to say, I'm really going to be thinking about you? Like, I think that those words have more weight to them now mm-hmm. for me, because I do think that I used to use a lot of that bypassing language, like, oh, yeah, I'll be praying for you. And then I didn't pray for them at all. But now I want to be so much more careful when I say things like, I'll be thinking of you while you have that tough conversation. Mm-hmm. But then to follow it up, you know, listen to that still small voice that I believe is me that says, check in with her and make sure that that conversation went okay. Make sure she doesn't need anything else from you. I don't know. I know I'm taking us up on rabbit trails, but I'm processing as we're kind of going through all this about worship.
I think, you know, a lot of times trauma is described as, you know, when a child has something happen to them. It's not mm-hmm. just that something happened to them, but the people who were supposed to be there when they needed someone weren't there in the way that they needed them to be there. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's trauma, and that's what little kids go through. And that's why the trauma stays with us, because we never resolved it.
Right.
So, you know, I think many times when someone's struggling, what they need most is just to tell somebody, mm-hmm. you know, and to have that person. I mean, the two words are compassion and empathy. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I have compassion for you. I'm so sorry that happened to you, right? Mm-hmm. But also empathy. I know what that's like. I've been through that, and I feel for you. You know, those things are really important, too.
Yeah. I do think that this person reached out because, you know, our son lives in Taiwan, and, you know, how do you not worry? Mm-hmm. How do you not worry and have those, you know, as Brene Brown says, that foreboding joy, you think, you know, something terrible is going to happen. And mm-hmm. how do you do that and not want to just, you know, revert back to the old Christian ways of, you know, praying for God's protection and things like that. Yeah. I don't know. Just lots for me to think about.
Yeah, and I want to make sure the listeners, if they're still tuned in at this point at 40-something minutes into the podcast, or 50 now, I want them to understand that all of our books like this that we wrote about religion and so on, we're not telling anyone else what to do or how to live your life or what to think, but maybe just challenging you to press it a little bit and say, what if I thought different? Mm-hmm. What if I've kind of followed my own inclination and my intuition that I've always had that, you know, even though we've done this for hundreds of years, does it make sense? Does it seem reasonable to me? So I hope you'll do that evaluation yourself and just go inside and look at it. You don't have to be like us. You don't have to do what we do or believe everything we say. Just, check it out for yourself.
Yeah, for sure. Yep.
Anything else to say?
No. I just appreciate you kind of letting me process on the podcast. So yeah, thank you to our listeners for letting me process. And I just really appreciate it.
Yeah, indeed. And as always, for the listeners out there, be where you are, be who you are, and be at peace.
Thank you for joining us today on the Desert Sanctuary podcast.
Remember, all who wander in the desert are not lost.
We believe all of our stories are sacred.
We are always here if you need someone to hear your story.
Check out our blog on Pathios and also our YouTube channel.
And stay tuned for our Leaning Forward conference.
Remember, we love you.
And be at peace.